Hey guys, good morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning. How are we doing? Good afternoon, evening, whatever time you're hearing this. Welcome back to another episode of 5 More Minutes with Josiah. If you're new to the show, then welcome. I guess the concept is the full name of this show is called I'll Keep It Short, Okay, 5 More Minutes, because it probably will never be a 5 minute episode ever. It's just too easy. But thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for rocking with me in my inconsistencies. All I can actually ever do is try to challenge them. But if you're new here, then welcome. It's a great space to be. And the way I would encourage you to take this space in is to relax your mind, make some space to really listen in and lean into what God is going to say, what God is going to do. And even if nothing happens, wait in his house. As the last episode, you heard a little bit more about, and be willing to wait. This is just a space for me just to bare my soul and the reflections I have in life, and talk through the intersections of faith, life, as a young man trying to figure things out and trying to order what's important. So that's what these episodes are for, really. But without further ado, welcome. That's the quickest intro I've ever done. We're gonna go into today's read. I guess today's episode, which is, we're going to talk about really what it means to be a good friend, or I don't even know what I've titled it, but we're going to talk about friendship. Now, I want to begin first. If you're watching this on YouTube, then you're going to see that I'm holding a book up on screen. This book's called Friendish. It's by Kelly Needham. And this is a Christian book talking about reclaiming real friendship in a culture of confusion. I've read about one chapter, because I'm reading it with a friend. I'm reading it in a relationship that I really want to deeply pursue, and I want to understand how does God really look at friendship far more than at a deeper level that is just outside of what I think it looks like and how I want it to be. Now, first of all, I want to caveat this the same way I did on TikTok, and I'm recording this episode because, you know, on TikTok, I made a little video, and it kind of went viral-ish, and people were asking a lot of questions. And I will caveat this episode with, first of all, friendships are really meaningful to me. I find lots of joy in them. They make me happy. They make me excited. I love deep friendship. I love deep relationship. I value them. And also, I've had lots of relational breakdowns through my life as I am in this journey of discovering what does friendship really mean. And to some degree, I'm the worst friend to many because I'm extremely active and not passive. And to others, I'm extremely passive and I don't care. It's interesting how so many dichotomies can exist in one place. Nonetheless, I really love relationships and I really value them, and I think I see them as super important. And yeah, I love relationships, really. I really, really love them. But yeah, I want to kind of share my reflections in this book and really talk about what I think it looks like to be a good friend. And I'm going to explore a few questions and concerns that I've seen as well. So pardon me if I'm on my phone, it's because I'm getting these questions out. There's been lots of questions asked, and I've answered a few of them in part. But I hope to hopefully answer them a little bit fuller. First of all, what does friendship look like from God's perspective? Well, the author really, in this book, really depicts this idea through the famous story of Jesus and Peter. And you see that Peter is making this endearing statement towards Jesus, saying, hey, Jesus, what do you mean? You like, stop talking negative. Like, Jesus is like, bro, like, I need to go and finish whatever I need to do, bro. Like, I'm finna die, boy. And Peter's like, yo, can you, like, bro, don't say that, bro. Like, chill. Like, kind of like similar to, you know, some of us would be like, yeah, God forbid. Don't say that. But Jesus at this point in his life is very aware of his purpose. He's very aware of his calling. And he's very aware, more aware than most, of what he has to do. So much so that he says to his father, God, like, if this can pass over me, that would be like incredible. But if it's not, it will be done. But we see we see Peter do this endearing thing, and he says to Jesus, hey, like, Jesus, like don't, no. And I think it's just good that we read that. I have a physical Bible, but it takes me too long sometimes to open a physical Bible because my mind is like the worst. But let's revisit that chapter. Peter in the Bible. Get thee behind me. You know what's also interesting? It's always when I'm like recording these episodes that the whole world decides to text me. Like it's incredible. But this is in Matthew 16, 23, where Jesus says, get thee behind me. But what happens before is Matthew 6:21 says, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. This is crazy because this is Jesus. They've been following Jesus. They've been living with Jesus. And Jesus is like, bro, I gotta go and die, bro. Like, I gotta go and die. Like, and this is someone that, you know. And Peter's making an endearing statement. He's saying, Jesus, like, that shall never happen to you, because he's like, bro, like, you know who you are, that, bro, you're my boy, bro, like, what, you get what I'm saying, like, you know, like, what, we're gonna back it, bro, like, and he's like, that'll never happen to you. And Jesus responds, 23, interesting response, I love that, you never really know what's wrong until Jesus responds. There's a word in that, but Jesus then says, get thee behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. It's interesting because a few chapters before, you see Jesus say that your faith, on your faith, I will build the church. We see this. That was so interesting. So Jesus recognizes him in one area. He says, in 18, he says, I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I would build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. He says in one parallel, Peter is this, what you said. And then like literally less than 10 chapters later, like legit 5, Jesus says, get thee behind me. Because it says, you don't have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. In this image, we see that friendship to God isn't just about relationship with him, but about godly concerns towards him. And to first begin this idea of what makes a good friend, I would argue that what makes a great friend is someone who is greatly concerned. First in a relationship with you, but also greatly concerned with God in your life. Greatly concerned with you and God. There is a deep desire and longing that in partnership that God's will over your life can be fulfilled. And in this friend, in this book, it starts by this story of her having to learn how to let go of her friends. It's a lot of friendship. If you realize, as we get older, I'm 25 now, so I've lost a lot of friends. Or at least I would say a lot of friendship has been restructured. I found that a lot of my friendships with people, deep friendships with people, have had to really be, I've had to let go of my idea of what I want from them, but also lean in wholly into what I believe God is doing in them. I literally have a friend, and I love her so much. She has a son right now, and I love her so deeply. And she just recently became a mother, and she's been going through a really tough season. And she's been so alienated, and I've done all I could to reach out. Like, I want to have a relationship with her so she knows that she has people there, that she knows that she's not alone. I've done all that I could. But what's painful is that throughout her whole relationship, it seems that she keeps pulling out. But we have these moments where she confesses her adoration and love for the fact that I have never given up on her. And in some instances, it pains me because I'm like, I want a friend in you too. But I've had to let go of the idea of what friendship looks like with her in the way I want it. But also look up to the fact that what God is doing in her requires me to not move from that post. And really, I don't think there is one definition of really what a good friend looks like, but I think arguably good friendship is knowing where God needs you to be in that person's life, even if they can't be anything for you. And then sometimes your love looks like Jonathan and David, where they loved each other in such a way that it was higher than it was almost like deeper than the marriage love. Like there was a soul, deep desire, like entanglement of the soul, that they had such a brotherhood, such a wholeness in each other
through their wholeness in Christ. That really looks like that. And in some instances, it looks like get thee behind me, because I believe at the middle and the most important part of what is friendship, that is a good friendship, is one that does not compromise you away from what God has called you to do, whether it's standing in partnership or in distance. That it's at the middle of it, a deep, deep, deep understanding of a godly concern over the person's life that you are walking in. And I've been dealing with friendships for years, and I've experienced deep, deep times of loneliness. I remember in university, a real thing. I remember in my second year of university, I was going through a period where I was going from couch to couch, homelessness. There are days I spent in the library. There are days I spent roaming the streets. There are days in which my guys would help me kind of like sleep here and there. There are days I just wandered, trying to figure out where I would be that was safe. I was also dealing with being publicly known. Like, everybody knew Mr. 200. They knew me. So I was dealing with all these different things, trying to find inner peace, balance, tried to continue to be where God needed me to be. And in that year, I remember I encountered such interesting friendships. The friends that I thought that I was the closest to, I often experienced a lot of the deepest heartbreaks with them, because I really needed their help. And in some instances, they actually let me down. Now, it's never an expression of what their intention was. I don't ever think that they wanted to be bad friends. They were trying by what they knew to be good friends. But oftentimes, there was one remarkable moment at which I specifically remember asking someone to leave their key, that I just needed to come back because I was staying there for a bit. And I think he went to go link a girl and forgot about me. And that was really painful for me. And my heart was really angry. I was like, God, like, for a moment, like, you would hope that these people would really like sacrifice whatever it was just to stand guard for me, even as I've stood guard for them in their life. I've been that friend that doesn't move, even when I face their rejection, whatever. And God had to teach me how to let go of that relationship and to be more concerned about what God is doing in their life. And sometimes friendship looks like being the light in someone's life. And sometimes friendship can look like receiving light in that relationship. And it happened to be that in those relationships, I felt that I had to make certain things known. Even if I was doing what I wasn't receiving, that I had to do love before I felt love. And I love the image of friendship in this Matthew 16. Shows us that real friendship is real friendship is whatever is not at opposition against God. Because Peter, this great friend of Jesus, in a moment, as he had endearing statements towards Jesus, unfortunately, you see him effectively put a wedge before Jesus and Jesus's purpose. And so Jesus rebukes him that you're acting like an enemy right now. In fact, get thee behind me, Satan. Friendships at the core of them have to be far more concerned with what God is doing, with godly concerns and the earthly concerns. Now, here's some things that we lean into friendships for. In the age of today, more than ever, friendships are increasingly even more valuable, I would argue, in the sense that more people are choosing to be independent, more people are choosing not to get married, specifically women. More women are choosing not to be married now than ever. We are seeing that friendships are now being relied on grossly in such a manner of life in itself. The book says it here like this. Look at this. The book says this. Sorry, for the first time I read this book without making notes, and it's throwing me off. The book says this. Nothing throws a wrench in your friendships like moving to a new city. All those familiar questions from junior high pop up again. Will they like me? Does everyone here already have their own friends? Will I fit in?
I've been spent most of my life in the Houston area. I moved to a suburb of Dallas in 2011 with my husband. Thankfully, we knew a few families there. I started to build a relationship with Lacey, the wife, another musician. She was a huge answer to prayer. She had space in life to build a new friendship and was eager to seek God. So we began to meet weekly to study the book of Job and pray together. One day I texted her to see if she wanted to hang out. She gracefully declined, explaining that she was spending time with another friend, someone we both knew. A sea of insecurities hit me as I remember that I was the new friend. Lacey already had established friendships and ours will be forming. This would be the first time I wondered about my standing with someone. She goes on to explain that I often compare my friendship. Someone said, I often compare my friendship with my friend to his friendship with other guys. I will compare the way that he and I interact to the way he interacts with other males, that he seems to have much fun with me as he does with others. Is our friendship as enriching to him as his other friendships are? I feel that I need to be his best friend in order to feel okay about myself. We're seeing here that there is a deep, deep desire for friendship. There's a deep, deep desire to be known. There's a deep, deep desire of longing that we have towards each other. That now more than ever, friendships are incredibly treasured goods. One in which we all hope to have and desire fully to be entrenched in. Now, I couldn't find specifically the specific section I wanted to show you guys on, but more than ever now, you look into the world, there is more need for friendships. There is more loneliness. There is an epidemic of loneliness happening in the world. More people need friends. Old people are going into supermarkets just to shop, just so that they can speak to someone, because now more than ever, we are more alone than ever. In fact, we have a culture that promotes such deep independence that people are racing grievously towards high mountains of success with deep valleys of darkness. We need friends. But in a world where we're also deeply alone, we're also so deeply broken that God is desiring for our wholeness, as well as he's designed for us to be in friendship. And I talked about this in the last podcast, right? We see Adam was chilling. There was no issues when he was alone with God. But you see that the moment that he and Eve come together, sin in nakedness, realize their nakedness, we begin to see what plays out to be rejection, lies. We start to see some of the first images of alienation, loneliness, even at what God had called to be good, which argues that to first understand what good friendship is, what is bad friendship? Bad friendship is anything that creates sin. Anything that promotes an environment in which creates death. God has designed friendships to be a life-giving thing. So friendship that is bad is anything that is life-taking. But how does it look life-taking? How does it look bad if I just want to have a relationship with my friend, if I just want to spend more time? The reality is a lot of our what we lean into friendships for, we enter relationships on a very selfish note. We want what we can get out of that friendship rather than what we can bring into that friendship. In fact, we're looking less to nurture people, but we're looking more to be nurtured. Friendships increasingly become our own safe havens in which we find the people who praise us the most, who give us the most, who love us the most. And far less are we paying attention to how God has defined it. Here's two of the most important commandments that I love. God says, love me with all thy heart, right? God calls us to eat. First thing he says is love me. Second thing he then says, love your neighbor. Many of us are loving our neighbors without loving God. Meaning many of us are going to friendships with a godly weighted desire. And we dump it on this person. He does not have a heavenly capacity to fill. They're just an instrument. And only God does that. And the motive of trying to be a good friend is great. But the action, if not understood correctly, produces no fruit. I've been dealing with so many deeply painful relationships recently. And in a lot of my relationships, I find that I'm the one that is a bit too aggressive or maybe too verbal. Sometimes I seem unkind. And in many of my relationships, I've been this person that has been grossly misunderstood. And because a lot of the space I occupy is less of a concern of trying to be just warm for the sake of warmth, even though friendship does serve that purpose, and comfort just for the sake of comfort, but friendship does serve that purpose. In fact, a lot of the spaces I've had in my friendships is that my friends often are scared to tell me things because they know that I will tell them the truth. And most people think good friendship is being able to hold a safe space enough primarily, which is true, right? But actually, good friendship, I think, is really, really having the heart for the person's wellness and wholeness. In fact, many of us, when we say we don't want truth, I'll tell you this. Many people tell me, Josiah, you need to be more gentle. And I'm like, I think I am gentle. And someone says, yeah, be more gentle, be more gentle. I'm like, I am a gentle person. And for them, when they say be more gentle, actually what they actually are trying to communicate to me is that they want me to be more passive. Usually when people say, yeah, be more gentle with me, it's actually they're saying be more passive with me, pay attention less. But in fact, we look at the image of Jesus. Jesus was very gentle in his approach. I mean, I would even say this. Consider that Jesus was God. Consider the most aggressive thing Jesus could do. He did it in our world. Without destroying our world, Jesus was always gentle. And we see this image of Jesus. Jesus was always gentle, but it was never passive. And in a lot of our relationships, sometimes we're so deeply hurt because people tell us things that we need to hear, that we don't want to hear. Because a lot of us have defined our friendships by this place where we can be whoever we want to be. Which I agree in. But here's what I think a valuable relationship is. I think a valuable friendship should be a space in which you are constantly cultivated in the image of which you were created to be. Meaning that the moment that you begin to bear fruits that are otherwise the kingdom in which you are from, you should be reminded. I put it like this. If I decide to stop paying my taxes, I will very quickly be reminded that I am a citizen of the United Kingdom and I have to do this, this and that, then I'll be fined. That's actually gentleness in the eyes of the kingdom. In fact, I could have my, I could be banished from the kingdom. I could have my citizenship revoked. There's many things. I could be arrested. Fining in the context of what could happen to me is actually kindness. And if we only define our relationships based on the emotional warmth that we feel, we might miss out on really beautiful relationships that will actually nurture us and sharpen us and comfort us and cover us. And I think we have to question, for all of us really, is number one, in one way, are we looking for what only God can give us in relationships? This idea that we have to be okay with the fact that most friendships will never fulfill us. I had to learn that the hard way. I had to learn that those boys who did something to me in those moments didn't do anything to me much more than did what they knew, did what they were taught, and did maybe, in my opinion, but they didn't stretch themselves, they didn't sacrifice, but that's what they knew. And I had to learn to love them because the reality is they could never feel me. And I could not cajole them through my circumstance to give me more than they're willing to give. But I have a Father in heaven who had me in his plans. I was always in his path the whole time. That's a good friend. And I think ultimately, and we can see this throughout the image, a true friend, you look at some of the truest disciples, you look at Paul, you look at Peter, John, all these, they laid their lives down in friendship to Jesus. That they continued to live their life chasing him, even when he was no longer there. It took some time. It took some moments. But a real friend, A real friend, a real friendship, a real friend is what calls us to greater, calls us to more. A real friend is far more concerned with the fulfillment of the purpose in your life than the fulfillment of their feelings in your life. They're more concerned with what God is going to do with you and how they can support and love you and nurture you to that place than just feeling satisfied. And I've had to come to peace with this, and I'm always coming to peace with this, that, and I love relationships. I have a deep desire to be known personally. I really want to be known, and I really want to be loved. And in fact, because when you live kind of your life in public, most people already come with a prescribed list of what they think you are. So a lot of time, you don't actually end up in real relationships until 6-8 months, because what happens is people think you're like this, and this is who you really are. But people come to this point, and you have to slowly show them. You have to come all the way here and slowly take them to you. But along this journey, people realize, people say, oh, bro, you're like a bit too aggressive. Oh, like, oh, I thought you were nicer. Oh, there's so many things that break the ideas of who you might be, that along the way, they might never, ever, ever actually get to know you. They might reject you along the way. And that hurts, man. That really is painful. But God is showing me that if you're concerned with my kingdom, that as you journey to wholeness with me, there will be people that will glide next to you. They will stand next to you, and you will turn to your left and right, and I will provide myself a lamb. I will provide to you the friends, the destiny helpers. And I've had to let go of my idea of friendship, and I'm having to learn. The Bible says, seek ye the kingdom and its righteousness, and all will be given unto you. The reality is, I have to get out my emotions when I feel that people don't serve me the way I deserve, and trust in the sovereignty of God, in his providence, that he will fill that gap that sometimes that the culture tells me can be found in marriage, friendship, singleness, that can be found in friendship and marriage. The reality is, there is a part of my fulfillment that only can be filled by God. That it's as useless sometimes begging people to give me something that they can't give me. It's as useless as trying to fill the ocean with a bucket and one tap. There's far too much to fill. And in one sense, we ask in very unrealistic things from friends sometimes. But then also, I even think there's another side of the argument. A lot of us are asking too little from friendships. A lot of us are not even given in friendships. A lot of us are not being who we're called to be in friendships because we're scared we're going to lose relationships. There's a bunch of us that are being timid in who God has made us to be because you don't want to lose friendships. Trust me, anything that stands in the way of what God has called for you, we see in Matthew 16, is actually not a friend. It's actually an enemy. And so we have to be mindful to understand that we chase God no matter what. Not just at a motive level of good-heartedness, but at a transformative level that we are continually inviting the Holy Spirit to reveal our haughty plans to us, to reveal our wickedness, to reveal our prides and humilities, so that we actually walk uprightly. That we don't just lock people off because they're just not Christians. Because the Bible also says that actually we're called to love people and be kind to them. I love this. So Romans 15 argues that there are two people in the kingdom, and it says that they're those who are strong in faith and those who are weak in faith. But Romans 15 says that those who are strong in faith have the responsibility to bear the weakness of others. Now, many of us in faith will be strong. Many of us will be weak. Some seasons we're very weak, and some very. Anyways. In every relationship, there is a strong and there's a weak. And if you find that you are the weak, God will fill that absence, but speak up and continue to see God. And God will fill you, and God is working on your behalf. And if you're the strong in the relationship, i.e. maybe the person who's waiting for people to give back to you, and maybe you might be in a place just like me, I'm fighting this urge to disappear and lean on my independence because I know that I'm so independent, I'm good at being independent. There's this part of me that's like, okay, just lean on your independence, you're good. don't crawl back into the cave that God has desperately died for you to come out of. Don't walk back into death to find something that exists outside of the cave. Trust in God. There is friendship to be won in Jesus. There is a comfort that can only be found in Him. There is a fulfillment that once you understand that you can love the Lord with all your heart, once that is at peace, you're not entangled or attached to relationships in the same way, but you can be involved. Many of us are trying to participate in relationships. But really, really where we should participate greater in is in our consecration, is in our separation, and in our abandonment to Christ. That I love Romans 9:19 says this, and it also says this in Jeremiah. It says, how can the clay ask the potter why it was made like this? So many of us are angry at God for the way we were created, suggesting better created things to Him. And deeply upset that He made us wrong, as if to say He didn't know what He was creating. Whilst in the same vein, with the same breath that He put in us, breathing out and telling Him, oh, God, you made me wrong. It is incredibly prideful and incredibly arrogant that in the same breath in which we say, God, I don't like what you made, we breathe the same air that He made. That if indeed we were such great enough creators to question His creation, we might have created our own things. Yet here we are, still seeking God for friendship. May God reveal the prides of our hearts and humble us. Or at least give us the boldness to humble ourselves. We all can be better friends to someone in our life. In fact, we can be better friends to Jesus. And I'm realizing that it's essential that I be a better friend to Jesus. Because that's the one relationship that really matters. So if you want to be a good friend, in fact, if you're seeking for a good friend, be a good friend to Jesus. Look at what He says is good. Look at the images and pictures of how He challenges, how He comforts. And be bold enough to part with that which He wants you to part with, so that you have space enough in the season when He will give you everything to hold. Trust in His sovereignty. Abraham was given a promise. And whilst he waited for the promise, his wife one day said, hey, bro, God ain't still showed up. Wagwan. And we then see that Ishmael was created and the world is still ripping the end of that. And so you read in Genesis, I think it's Genesis 15, somewhere in Genesis 15, we see that God wanted to do something Himself. He told Abraham, listen, I want to make a covenant with you. Get all the animals, sacrifice them. And he got all these animals, cow, like a good juicy cow, all the way to a dove. And he sacrificed all but not the dove. And usually in that time, when you're making a covenant, is that you'd split the animal in half. And then usually, just the same way that when married people were married, they would walk in between the two sides of this animal. The same way that in marriage, actually, the families are on the left and the right, and you walk in the midst of them, as so to walk through this covenant of bloods. You walk through the blood. And God then tells him to do that because He wants to make a covenant. Then it says, then you see that the Bible says that he was watching out, and then he had to waver off some vultures along the way. There's a lesson in that, that a lot of us have to watch out for the vultures on our journey towards true friendship with Jesus. Because some friendships will show up as enemies in disguise. Some emotions will show up as opposition that will take you to deep darknesses, that will take you away from Jesus. Some relationships will come in and make you not want to go to church again. Some relationships will make you very angry at God. Don't be seduced. Trust in God. Trust in God and trust in God alone. He will renew your strength. He will bring you out of the season that you're in. He says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou with me, thy rod and thy staff. Like that verse, there is nobody walking with you there except him. That there are places, deep darknesses, that no friend can go but Jesus. No friend can go but what he, that which he put inside of you. There is a space in you that only the Spirit of the Lord can heal. Because he made you in the environment of himself. How can you function without air? And many of us need to stop holding our breath on Jesus. And breathe out so we can breathe in. That when he made earth and creation, he spoke to himself. And we were created in his image. That he has made it so that eternally he is our prime environment, the same way water is a prime environment for a fish. That he's our prime environment. And the farther from our environment we are, the longer from our environment we are, the quicker we are to die. The same way that you take a child out of the environment in which it is meant to be nurtured in the womb, the less likely the child is to survive. In our friendships, as we look to talk on the practical, and we can talk about this a little bit more, maybe hear what people are saying, and I would love to answer a Q&A about this, so please. First, we have to understand that real friendship first begins by us being recognizing the realest friend we've ever had, and then also being the best friend that we can ever have. Love Jesus, love God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. And if you can do that, along the way you'll find other people that love you, and you'll find that they love you well, and you find that you are not moved when people fail you because you're already secure. That friendship and relationships don't become a sense of security, they just become an expression of God's security. Just one, not all. They just show you what God has done. They don't be the thing that you use to find out what God can do. So I'm going to encourage you with this, and maybe in the next episode I might answer some questions. These episodes never go as they plan, and really I'm blessed in that. I think in a world so curated, it's essential to create space to move freely. Because what I really want to do is lead you to put it like this. Like when you go to church, if your pastor can't lead you alone to salvation, to sanctification, we need the help of the Holy Spirit. But a good environment in church is creating a space in which encounter can be had, i.e. we can only facilitate what God himself alone can do. We can't try to take up that space and try to answer questions. What we do is we have to make space and teach in a way that God can progressively reveal himself to you. We can't come and give truths and say, this is the only truth, when we don't even know what's the heaviest truth. And so what we have to do, and what I want to do and I aim to do, is that we create space enough that plants a seed of truth. But a seed enough that makes you want to watch it, water it, nurture it, give it some sun, and wait by it to see something grow. All I aim to do with these podcasts isn't to give you a definite answer or my opinion. I'm not trying to preach. I don't want to give you anything much more than leading you to a place where you can deeply, deeply continue the journey of which we've just began. Only God's truth is the greatest truth. And so I really just want to continue to create space. That's what I want to do. Create space, create space, create space. All right. I love you guys. Thanks for another 5 minutes. God bless you. We'll speak soon. Peace. You've reached the end of another episode of 5 More Minutes with Josiah. Thank you guys, and thank you for spending so much time with me. I hope you've been ushered into a place of real reflection, and you know, I hope that you really, really leave this conversation feeling refreshed and with so much on your heart to think and flesh out. So yeah, thank you for listening. And like I said, every end, what's most important is how can we take this information and how can we get practical with it. So
If you're looking to be a better friend, ask yourself, where do I start now? Where do I begin? And how can I love before I give? Take some time, reflect, and I hope you enjoy your day. Speak soon.